Well, good morning, beloved ones. Turn to someone and tell them, I am great and grateful. I am great and grateful. I am great and grateful. Yes. I am great and grateful. That's a wonderful state to be in, to be great and grateful. And when we're grateful, we have an opportunity to remember and recognize not only our greatness, but the greatness and goodness of God. And that's what it's all about, friends. That is what it's all about. So here we are this Sunday, and this past Wednesday, as I was listening, I said, oh, my goodness, she's given my talk, but our wonderful song leader. But she was absolutely correct in what she was saying. Hello? So, it's all good. So, this past Wednesday marked the beginning of the Lenten season. That 40-day period of preparation and purification for the powerful Easter experience that we hope to have 40 days hence, right? Now, even though we have finished our series on the biblical basics that I was doing, I thought that we would spend, however, a little time on the subject of Lent, even though this concept or the observance of Lent, or Lent as we know it, is not found in the Bible anywhere. It has no biblical basis, right? Rather, it's an observance that was established by the church officials at the Council of Nicaea in about 325 AD. So it's been around a long time, but it is an observance that was established by men. And that's okay, because sometimes we establish rituals and activities that have spiritual meaning for us, and that's fine. But we need to just kind of understand where it comes from and what we're doing when we engage in those types of rituals or activities. So the forefathers saw it as an opportunity, this Lenten experience, as an opportunity for self-examination, for prayer, for penitence, all being demonstrated by self-denial. It has to do with self-denial in preparation for Easter. Now, we have to understand a perception that we have around this whole concept of self-denial and where that comes from. Because even though we have moved off of perhaps the thought from, you know, 325 AD, which is thousands of years ago, we have a new thought and a new understanding. But back then, and even today, this whole concept of Lent is seen as a time of sacrifice, a time for sacrifice and for fasting and for doing good works. And the more popular practice today is that of giving up something that you do, or giving up something that you like that is not necessarily for your good, right? For your highest good. It's about this self-denial of that which you think is bringing you pleasure or goodness or whatever. Some people give up food. That's one of the more common ones. People say they're going to give up food or things that they may crave, or they give up some bad habits, maybe drinking, smoking, partying, whatever. Anything that they usually do in excess, right? And it always ends up being a test to see whether or not you can give up something without giving in to that something, right? If I can just give up eating chocolate, not giving in to the desire. I always use that because I love chocolate. You know, but it becomes this test to see whether you can give up something without giving in to something. And then the question is, can you do it for 40 days? Can you give it up for 40 days? And then soon it becomes less of a meaningful spiritual practice and more of a test of your willpower, right? It becomes a test of your personal willpower. Can I do this? As opposed to the spiritual deeper meaning of why you might desire to do this. We're also kind of led to believe that the greater your sacrifice, the more God is pleased with you. Right? If you are really giving up something you really like, you're earning some kind of brownie points with God. Or that God will only bless you if he is pleased with you. Pleased with your behavior. Pleased with the things that you're doing. Now, this whole notion of God needing us to sacrifice something in order to please him, as if God really needed our ability to do that. But this whole notion of God needing us to sacrifice something in order for us to be able to please him can be seen in the Old Testament. It's found a lot in the Old Testament with much of the Hebrew traditions of sacrificing animals as a part of their rituals. Right? Now you have to understand that in the Old Testament, there is a concept of God that is portrayed as a capricious God, as a fickle God. You know, a God that can turn on you at the drop of a dime if you're not exactly in alignment and you're not exactly obedient. You know, a God that's going to smite you, smote you, smoke you, whatever. God's going to do it. Right? And so we have this whole concept of, well, we better be on the right side of God, right? We better be on the right side of God. And what could be more empowering for us than to be able to offer something that is precious to us, till we offer that to God, right? And so we had this concept of the offering sometimes first fruits, sometimes offering livestock. And the livestock had to be without blemish, had to be perfect, right? And so, you know, is it because if you could sacrifice livestock in those days, having livestock and having fruit and food was not just a nice thing. It was a matter of your survival, right? Because they were hunters and gatherers. See, right now we go to the office and we do work and somebody gives us money. Then they were hunters and gatherers. Their lives depended upon the livestock that they could raise to feed their families, right? And the fruit and the food that they could raise. And so what better way if you could, that was precious, if you could then sacrifice something of that nature. That would surely yield you some good favor with God. If you were to give up your best calf or whatever, then you would hopefully be getting some good favor with God. And I'm thinking, wow, thank God we have grown in consciousness, right? I'm thanking God that we've grown in consciousness and we have grown in our God concept so that we no longer need to sacrifice people or animals. Because there was a time where people were even sacrificed as a way to what please the gods. And so thank God we no longer have to do that, right, as a way to please God. But it was presented. And even though the Old Testament doesn't talk a lot about people being sacrificed, it does about the Old Testament. There is one, about animals. But there is one instance in the Old Testament where Abraham, who was considered, you know, the father of nations, Abraham was asked to sacrifice his only son that he and Sarah had had when Sarah was 99 years old. Now, that's a big sacrifice, right? But we have that demonstration, and Abraham, being a man of faith, was willing to do that. And at the last minute, God changes God's mind and decides to send a ram in place of Isaac. And so that means that he did not have to do that. Now, we can go into the whole metaphysics of that, but I'll save that for another time. But I'm thinking then, so we move from Abraham and the Old Testament concept into this New Testament concept. And now we have Jesus on the scene. And Jesus is seen as a what? Sacrificial lamb, right? Demonstrating the ultimate sacrifice by giving up his very life. Giving up his very life for us, and it is all somehow sanctioned by God. And so very often we think about this a lot in a traditional sense and from our traditional approaches, and we are told that this is the great sacrifice, and hopefully that this was the last sacrifice that was going to be required by the divine. But I'm thinking, you see, this here, right here, is where we might need to recognize that we have also shifted in our God concept. That there's also a needing. We've shifted from the Old Testament. Before even the Old Testament, it was basically your primitive cultures who were looking at the God, the rain God, the sun God, and, you know, the angry God and blessings and whatever. And then we moved into an Old Testament where they said, no, there's one God, and we had that. And then we went to the New Testament, and Jesus brings a new understanding. But could it be that we are also at a point in time where we, as we continue to grow and to evolve in consciousness, as we continue to expand our God concept and our understanding of spiritual laws and spiritual principles, that it just might be time for a new thought, a new perspective, and an expanded consciousness reflective of our spiritual evolution at this point in time? So I'm saying, well, what if we were to see God as a loving, compassionate being, essence, energy, spirit, principle, whatever, that does not require sacrifice, but surrender? What if it's not sacrifice that we're being asked to do or to engage in, but it is more of surrender? And that what we are asked to give up is not food or chocolate or things that we like, but to give up our fear of and resistance to allowing the full presence of God in us to lead, to guide, to direct, to have full sway over our being. What if that were it? Because if we think about it, that's kind of what we're afraid of. If I really give everything to God, somehow or another, I can't give my whole self. I trust God, but, you know, but he may have me moving over to Butte, Montana. If I give him my full, you know what I mean? He may ask me to do that which I don't really want to do. Right? And so if we're honest, there's always a little hold back. But what if we were asked to surrender all the things that we're being asked to give up is not this stuff, this outer stuff, but this inner concept, so that we can experience all of the infinite blessings of God, so that we might experience our true communion and oneness with God, and having complete faith that God is only going to lead us and guide us to our highest and best experience, to really have that. So this notion of giving up or giving in is now replaced by a more trusting notion of letting go and letting God. It's not about giving up and giving in, but about letting go and letting God, right? Because letting God, the good, right? The good omnipotent, letting God, the good, find full expression in and through you is a very powerful thing. And what God requires is surrender and not sacrifice. Turn to somebody and say, surrender and not sacrifice. Surrender and not sacrifice. Yes. We're in a New Testament beyond even a New Testament understanding, right? Of being surrendered means being open and receptive to the presence of God. Open and receptive to the leading and the guiding and directing of God. Open and receptive to the living spirit of truth that indwells you. That truth that's going to set you free. Being open and receptive to that, you see? Surrendering our willfulness so that we can become willing, right? Surrendering willfulness for willingness. Being willing to let go and let God. Letting go of those false beliefs. Letting go of limited thoughts and feelings and error consciousness. For these are the things, friends, that stand in the way of our manifesting the good or demonstrating God. Right? That's what's standing in the way. And so, in the New Thought tradition, we would say that keeping a true Lent is about establishing a consciousness that is open and receptive to the truth. It's about cleansing and purifying our consciousness so that it reflects more of the divine. More of God is able to come through. So we feast on the truth and we fast from all that is untrue. We feast on truth and we fast from all that is untrue. So if in the traditional way of observing Lent is about letting go of our sinful ways, letting go of sin and our error ways, then we would think that metaphysically then that it's about letting go of error thinking, letting go of error thoughts, because that's what causes us to miss the mark, right? It's the error thinking we have. So when we release that, then we know that we're having a deep and abiding shift. Because after all, any real and lasting change that we desire must take place first as a result of a change in what? In consciousness. Because if you don't have it changed in here, you can do all this outer stuff. You can turn around 5 times, hop on 2 feet, do whatever you want to do. Create all of the rituals you want, but if you don't have a change in here and a change in here, it is not going to be lasting. So what we're talking about, is the ability to give up our negative and limited and false beliefs, to fast from holding those in consciousness and feasting on the truth. That's what keeping a true Lent is all about. And to do it for at least 40 days. Now, the number 40 metaphysically means the time necessary for spiritual growth or change or completion. That's what the number, any derivative of 40 or 4 means the spiritual time necessary. Whatever the time is, now that could be 100 years, but if it's that time that's necessary, symbolically it's called 40 years or 40 days or 40 minutes or 40 hours. Or 4, right? So it's a time necessary for growth. And so we have some examples in the Bible. It rained for how many days in Noah's day? 40 days and 40 nights, right? And so that the earth, when it was done, that the earth was now cleansed and ready for a new experience. This is what it symbolizes, right? We also have Jesus was in the wilderness. How many days? 40 days and 40 nights. Being tempted by, as the scripture says, the devil. This was all before he began his ministry. But we say, and if you don't remember, you got to look up the talk on devil and sin and all that stuff to get a proper perspective. But what we would say is that spiritually or metaphysically, his consciousness was being cleansed of any type of error thinking, any type of egoic thoughts, any type of negative and limited thoughts or devilish thoughts that would cause him to feel for one moment that he was separated from God, from the divine. And once having that cleansed consciousness, he's ready to then begin his ministry, right? And so what we know about this is that this is a powerful symbol for us that we could use. I want to read some excerpts from this book called Keep a True Lamp by Charles Fillmore. And I'm going to read the introduction, which is from a metaphysician named Georgiana Tree West. She's probably deceased too, long old time metaphysician. And she writes the introduction for Charles Fillmore's book, Keep a True Lamp. And it actually is a recap of everything that I've just said, but sometimes we have to hear stuff more than once. So, this is what, it's a little long, so just open up. Well, open your hearts and minds. So it says this. It says, the Christian world is once again observing the Lenten season, the season of prayer and fasting that precedes the joyous festivity of Easter. It is commonly believed that the Lenten period has to do with the events of the 40 days preceding the resurrection. This is an erroneous idea. Lent is a church institution, and there's no authorization for it anywhere in the New Testament. The idea, however, has a sound spiritual basis. Moses, Elijah, and Jesus himself set a precedent for it. For each observed a 40-day period of prayer and fasting as a preparation for spiritual work. So this is a preparation for some type of spiritual work that we want to do and accomplish. Moses received the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai at the conclusion of his fast. Elijah talked with God on Mount Horeb at the conclusion of his period of prayer and fasting. And Jesus began his great spiritual ministry at the close of his fast in the wilderness. The ancient Hebrew writers made a practice of using numbers to symbolize ideas. 40, in their mind, was a four-square number, suggesting the idea of a foundation for something to follow, an idea of completeness. So 40 represents you're setting a foundation. Whether it's 40 days or 40 nights, it's a foundation. So the number 40 is frequently used in the scriptures to indicate a completed preparation for something to follow. When we consider Lent as a well-rounded or completed season of retreat from the things of the world for the cleansing of the mind and the recollection of the things of spirit, it becomes a true season of preparation for the glorious Eastertide. A preparation for the resurrection of the mind from the darkness of its sins, doubts, and false beliefs into the light of understanding. Lent, then, is a church institution embodying an exalted idea, the idea of cleansing and disciplining both mind and body toward the end of making them more receptive to the Christ ideas. Like many other religious practices, it is too often observed in letter, but not in spirit. Too many people make a fad out of Lent. It's fashionable to give up some luxuries. And when those luxuries have to do with food and drink, it's profitable physically. There's also psychological value and the mental discipline involved. But such observance has nothing to do with being a Christian. Atheists get the same benefit. Every follower of Jesus, and we would say Jesus the Christ, who would keep Lent in the true Christ spirit, follows the way of prayer and fasting that he taught his disciples. He revealed that prayer and fasting are the sure way to spiritual power, the way to keep the soul cleansed and purified that it might feel the presence of God. When the disciples were unable to heal the epileptic boy, he told them they lacked faith, that such healings could only be brought about by what? Prayer and fasting. Jesus revealed that fasting, like prayer, is a matter between man and his maker. He told his disciples that they were to make no show of their fasting, meaning you don't have to go around and say, you know, oh, I'm fasting for 40 days or, you know, or do some kind of outer thing. He said, appear not unto men to fast, but unto thy Father which is in secret. So it's not about some outer display of how much you've given up and what you're doing and all that stuff. This is an inner experience between you and God, right? He says, appear not unto men to fast, but unto the Father which is in secret, and the Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. He gave the same instruction concerning prayer. Prayer and fasting, then, are matters of communion with God, not matters of public display. They are transactions in mind. It is of no use to go through the outer form if the feeling of communion with God is not established. In abstinence from worldly things, the mind must be filled with thoughts of God, else there is no spiritual value in fasting. To observe Lent according to the spirit rather than the letter, we must fast from criticism and condemnation and feast in brotherly love. Fast from false beliefs in sickness and weakness and feast on the truth of God's omnipresent perfect life. Fast from false beliefs in lack and limitation and feast on the truth of God's bountiful goodwill. Ideas such as these form an excellent basis for Lenten meditations and help establish permanent spiritual values in heart and mind. So I ask you, friends, what is it that you need to give up in consciousness? What are the thoughts and the feelings and the attitudes and the beliefs and the perceptions that you truly desire to release and be free of? What is it, you see? What is it that you're willing to surrender in consciousness? What limitations will you deny having any power over you? And what truth will you then affirm? Because this is true fasting and praying. It's denying that anything out here has any kind of power over you. And it is affirming the truth of God. So I'm going to ask, will you commit to a 40-day practice of using denials and affirmations and fasting and praying in consciousness around something that does not or did not serve you well? It doesn't serve you well in consciousness. So that come Easter time, you will emerge anew. You will emerge with overcoming power and a resurrected consciousness. I've been telling you that somehow or another, Spirit has placed upon my heart to tell us all that we are doing a new thing here in this ministry and in this church. And that this year truly is dedicated to raising our consciousness and our commitment to God, to our lives, to our work, to this ministry, to this church, to the world. We're raising our consciousness and our commitment to these things. We're going to have a shift in consciousness, right? We are going to raise the vibration and actually be a living demonstration of the truth, collectively and individually. And we'll be doing some things. We're going to be doing some things throughout the year. We have an upcoming, we're going to be doing a 40-day Daniel fast, the Daniel plan, which is working with the physical body and helping to do that with shifting a consciousness so that we have that wonderful expression of physical health and wellness. We're also at some point going to do a 40-day prosperity plan that will shift us into wealth and the consciousness of abundance and blessings by, again, holding the right thoughts and consciousness. So I'm thinking, well, why not start all this off with a 40-day Lenten experience? Why not start by fasting from negativity and feasting on the truth? And so here's an example. You can just pick one idea, because sometimes we get derailed because we picked so many things. How about you pick just one idea, one negative idea or belief that somehow has plagued you over and over in consciousness, and commit to fasting from it for 40 days. And maybe it may, you know, because all it takes is one idea. It takes one idea or one true statement held in mind that can actually cause a shift in your consciousness. So what I'm saying is to take one, develop a denial and an affirmation. See, I got one for me this morning, and I use my denial like this. I am free from. So I include that in my affirmation. I'm free from whatever it is that you're going to do. So every day for 40 days, I'm going to affirm and deny, deny and affirm. I am free from, and it's my thing. I'm not going to tell you what I'm working on. You got your thing. But I am free from, and you get, you know, work on that. Every day for 40 days, spend some time releasing yourself, fasting and feasting on the truth. I'm free from, and then claim the affirmation that you want, right? Because everything that we do here in this ministry, the reason why we gather is for the purpose of raising our consciousness, is it not? That is why we are here, so that we can be made more present and available, so that the Spirit of God can move through us and can be made manifest in our lives, in our affairs, in our experiences, in our relationships, in everything that we do. So God is moving and living and having its being in and through us. So I am ready. I don't know about you, but I'm ready for some resurrection, some transforming, some healing, some harmonizing power to be fully expressed in my life and affairs. And so I'm committing to a 40-day plan of my Lenten plan, a 40-day prosperity plan, a 40-day health plan. I'm going to be 40 days to death, but I'm going to shift my consciousness. That's why I'm going to keep a true Lent. And I'm going to raise my consciousness and my commitment to God, my life, and to this ministry. I hope you'll join me on the journey, friends. Blessings and namaste. Blessings. Blessings. Namaste. Blessings.